All right, I'm on. Then I'm going to put this one in here. This is quite the system you have here. I feel like I'm a dog with an invisible fence. I hope since the last time I talked to you that you've replaced your toothbrush, your pillow, your mattress. You've rearranged several things in the house. We do have... It won't be as expensive tonight. So maybe I notice we have a few empty chairs. Perhaps those people were afraid of the financial burden of coming here and knowing that they wouldn't be able to do what I need them to do and also to obey Steve Diggs at the same time. So the Bible is full of information that it should not have. You remember that setup from last time that we talked about the Buick and the Pyramid? Things that are in the Bible that... could only have been given to us from off-site. But there are other bits of information as well. And there's a ton of it. We may get to some of that tonight. But there's some other information as well that I just want to help you help your kids, your grandkids, your neighbors. Now, to do that, it means that I can't go really weird science on you. Because I could, and you could go home tonight and think, boy, I wish that atheist friend of mine would meet Patrick. Well, that's of no use to anybody. We need to be able to get you to be able to talk to your friends, all right? So, one of the things I had somebody tell me yesterday at lunch, that I took a preacher out to lunch, and he said, I keep telling my church that people don't believe the Bible, so if you're going to try to tell them there's a God, you can't use the Bible. And I'm saying, yeah, you can. Even if they don't believe it, you can. And we're going to show you that tonight. We're going to start with the oldest book in the Bible, and that's not Genesis. The oldest book in the Bible is Job, by some measure. It is such an old Hebrew that it's hard to translate. Job is one of the best arguments I know of for owning three or four different versions of the Bible. Because there are words in Job that only show up one time in all of our Hebrew, and so we don't know exactly what that word means. And so you get a bunch of different versions and you get a better idea of the flow of Job. God wanted us to know something about him and about us, and therefore he gave us Job. And it breaks my heart that we can't really get into any of that because we're not talking about the theme of the book of Job. We're just going to talk about what happened when God spoke back. Now, they'd been doing all their arguments and they'd been... people talk about the patience of Job. If I say Job and you think patience, it's because you've never read the book. Because the patience is gone by chapter 3. And that's not a dig at him at all. I wouldn't have lasted that long. My microwave breaks. And I go, there is no God. You know, I'm very fragile. So I'm not anti-Job by any stretch. But he's yelling at God. He's yelling at all this other. And so finally, God speaks back. And it's near the end of the book. We're going to go there now. I want you to have your Bibles just so that you can know where this is and how to do this. All right? So go to the middle of the Old Testament. And in chapter 38 is when he starts talking back. And he starts talking about a lot of sciencey stuff. His main point to Job is this. If you know how to run a universe, then you can fight me. But you don't know how to run a universe. And in chapter 38, most of chapter 38, he is walking him through the cosmos. For example, the stars, the different constellations, the way that light breaks down, the mass of light, and all that sort of thing. But that's very sciencey, so we're not going to go there. We're going to go near the end of chapter 38, which really belongs in chapter 39. I think most of you are aware, because you are church people, the Bible was not originally divided into chapters and verses. In fact, I would highly recommend that you get one of the versions of the Bible that are out there, and they're in all the different versions. But in the printing, they take out all of the chapter and verse. It makes it read so much better. Because with chapters and verses, we read it episodically, as if everything was a discrete unit. Whereas without them, it's a big narrative. And that's the way it's supposed to be. It's supposed to flow like this. Well, anyway, near the end of chapter 38, let's start with chapter with verse 39. Chapter 38, verse 39. Do you hunt the prey for the lioness and satisfy the hunger of the lions when they crouch in their dens or lie in wait in the thicket? Who provides food for the raven when its young cry out to God and wander about for lack of food? Well, this is pretty interesting stuff. Because it's a big question that you can memorize to use. And that is, what did it eat? When we talk about evolution, and please remember, people say, I don't believe in evolution. Well, of course you do. The corn we eat was not the corn that was here 100 years ago. And by the way, if you say, I don't eat genetically modified food, then you're dead. Because every food we eat is genetically modified. We just did it. Maybe Monsanto didn't do it, but we did it in the backyard by crossing things and such. That's evolution or evolution. In fact, the first person to really notice this was Leonardo da Vinci, that when a dark-skinned person married a light-skinned person, their kids are kind of in the middle. That's evolution. I'll put it another way to you. God did not make poodles. I know him. He wouldn't do that. God made dog, Canis. And we bred it until it looked like an explosion in a Q-tip factory. But that's on us. That's not on him. We bred these little purse dogs, and we bred the big dogs, and we bred them all. But they're dogs. They're all dogs. We started with the basic blueprint, and then if you follow the American Kennel Club, for example, you know that they just put a new dog in. Today? Yesterday? This week? Something like that, right? Weird-looking little thing, but it took them forever to recognize the Border Collie, and it's still not a full member. The reason is, Border Collies, if left on their own, will eventually go out of existence because they will interbreed with others. It's not... I'm getting too sciencey. The point being, these are all evolution. When most people say they don't believe in evolution, what they don't believe in is that once upon a time nothing blew up and became dogs. And I agree with that. I agree with that absolutely. But all through this evolutionary journey, what did it eat? Is a big question. I can still remember. And I wasn't much of a believer at the time. In fact, I was an agnostic who was hoping to one day approach atheism. And the professor drew on the board an amoeba. And he was an English fellow. And only suitable. We were in England. And so he drew on the board an amoeba. Now, anybody can draw an amoeba. If you've never drawn one, you can do so right now. All you have to do is start a line, move it around, and connect it. Because there's no shape to an amoeba. It's whatever you want. And he said, the first creature was somewhat like an amoeba. And my hand went up. And this is completely involuntary. I don't mean for it to. I have questions. That's all. And so he looked at me and I said, what did it eat? And the whole room got quiet. Because amoeba only eat living things or things that used to be. So if it's the first living thing, the history of life on planet Earth has got about 15 minutes. And unless through mitosis, it splits, and then one of it eats the other. But after 15 billion years or so, you'd still have one amoeba. You understand what I mean? So what did it eat? Unless we have the dreaded rock-eating amoeba, we've got a real problem here. And by the way, they are actually actively trying to find a way that amoeba might have survived on non-organic material. After a while, you just... amoeba are amoeba, and they eat certain things. All the way through, you go up through the geological column, for example, and you'll see these animals, then they moved into these animals. What did they eat? Where are their prey? How did they survive? It's rather like this. I can remember, same university, they were explaining that the rabbit has such massive big legs because it developed those to outrun the foxes. Now, that's actually Lamarckian. Let me rephrase that. Only those with the bigger back legs were able to outrun the foxes. And they made babies passing on that trait. And only among them, the biggest back legs got to outrun the foxes. And so on and so on. So that's why rabbits have big back legs. And that sounds very reasonable until you wonder what the foxes were doing this entire time. Why weren't they developing leg technology to catch up with the rabbits? There's another issue. If it was taking them 15 to 75,000 years to develop the larger back legs, it means they were already avoiding the foxes. Therefore, they didn't need the, quote, improvement. You see what I mean? There's some real issues here. There is a fox-bunny balance in the universe. Think about squirrels. You were probably told when you were a kid, oh, in the fall, the squirrels run off into the trees in the forest, and they gather the nuts, and they take them back to their home, and they stuff them in, and in the winter, they eat the nuts and stay alive. And that is so almost true. Oh, it's such a lovely almost story. But it's untrue. One, squirrels have terrible memories. They're wonderful at solving puzzles, as you know, if you tried to feed birds. But they have completely... They do gather nuts and they do store them, but they have no clue where they put them. None. And they do eat nuts during the winter, but they're not necessarily the ones they buried. They just happen to find them. And if they were the ones they buried, they're still surprised. So, the question is, which evolved first, the squirrel or the tree? Because we have a tree-squirrel balance. If they ate all the nuts they found and stored, we would not have forest. And we would be up to here with squirrels. We have to have a certain number of squirrels die and a certain number of nuts be forgotten to have the squirrel balance. The balance is important. And this is massively important, the more you think about it. Let me put it a different way. Let's get a woodpecker, shall we? We're going to start with a bird. I'm going to spot you a bird. We've already got a functioning planet with insects, trees, and a bird. Now, the bird wants to become a woodpecker for reasons that escape me at the moment. But it flies, and we have no idea how it even knows there are bugs under the bark. But I'm giving you that, too. So the bird then flies. He lands on a tree, and he promptly falls off because... Woodpeckers have a spur here that helps them lock onto the tree or your house. And other birds don't have that. So they really can't balance like that very much. And even if they could hold, as soon as they put their head back, they'd fall off. So he's gone bummer. And he flies about for at least 12,000 years, developing a little nodule that eventually becomes a spur. All right? Now, he's quite hungry at this stage. I think we could all agree. But he lands on the side of the tree, and he's very quite proud of the spur. You know, he wants the kids to see. Pulls back and goes, and he dies because he's just driven his beak through his brain. Woodpeckers have a shock absorber type cartilage unit built right in here, and I'm not going to tell you how I know this, but if you hold a woodpecker's head. You can move. It pivots. That thing pivots. Now, I will tell you this. When you release the woodpecker, release it away from you. I don't want to tell the rest of this story. I'm pretty sure it's illegal. So the kids have just seen Dad die after waiting 15,000 years to eat. And they're going, well, that's just completely tragic. And so they finally fly about for another estimated over 30,000 years to develop the cartilage system. And now, yay. And they land on the tree. They got the spur. They were doing the spur along with Dad. They pull back and there's a bug. And they can't get it because birds have short, clubby tongues. Except woodpeckers. They have long tongues. There's one species of woodpecker that's tongue so long it won't fit all in the mouth. So they stick it up the nose. Yeah. So I don't care what your job is. You could just sit there and go, I'm not a woodpecker. It's not so bad. Now that I think of it, my tongue's in my mouth, not up my nose. So, you get the point. The point is, how do you transition from one to the other? Because while you transition, so does the food supply. And if the food supply isn't transitioning, you go out of existence. Why are you transitioning? Think of the dentist fish. These are fish about that long. Well, for those of you listening on the recording, they're about that long. I think there should be a penalty for not showing up, don't you? So there you are. Now, they swim about in schools in the sea, with all of our brain power, we cannot figure out what the signal is. They get a signal, and they stop, and they swim in a circle. It's about 6 to 8 feet, and they swim in a circle, and they're giving off some kind of signal we cannot find, because all of a sudden, barracuda start showing up. Barracuda showing up is normally not a good thing. But they show up, and they hover about 3 feet over the floor of the sea, and they get in a line. They're better behaved than people at Walmart. And one at a time, they swim into the middle of the dentist fish, open their mouth, and the dentist fish don't flee. Rather, they go into the mouth and pick all the stuff off the teeth. The dentist fish only eats stuff off barracuda teeth. Without the dentist fish, barracuda would lose their teeth and not be quite so fearsome. They would die at that point. The question then has to arise, which came first? And how long did one come before the other? You have just a little bit of time. Think about the fish that are the anglerfish. You know the anglerfish? Way down in the depths of the darkest parts of the sea where sunlight never comes, they have a little thing hanging off the front of their head that it looks like a lantern. And in it, it lights up because in there are bugs that by being alive, bioluminescence, they light up. And that attracts other fish to them, and then they eat them. How long did that take to work out? That's pretty complex, that is. Or like the alligator snapping turtle that opens its tongue and flicks it out and looks like a worm. Who taught him that? Or the bee? The bees know how to dance. And the dance says, there's some pollen over here, and it's that far away, and it says, here are the directions. I love it, the fact that I serve a God that taught bees how to dance. And I've got brethren don't think they're allowed to clap. I was in a church in East Tennessee, and I said, the teens seem a little bit... I went around fixing churches for a long time. I went around or disturbing them. And I said, the teens don't seem to be so happy. And they said, oh, well, they'll get over that. That was just last week. There was a baptism of one of the teens, and the teens started clapping, and that upset some of our older folks, so we told them not to do that anymore. I said, all right, two things. One, you've just guaranteed that these teens will leave this church as soon as possible. You've made it a one-generation church. If that's your decision, fair enough. Just put that on the sign, and that'll help. Two, why would you not? And they said, well, you know, we want to keep it, you know, decent and in order. You know, all that means is we want to keep it under my control the way I like it. I said, the Bible says the angels in heaven are rejoicing. Do you think they're up there going, amen? I don't always get invited back, but everything eats. So what did it eat? How about the next, and we could go on, I've got hours of those, because and the connection of how things have to eat. But we go, do you know when the mountain goats give birth? Do you watch when the doe bears are fawn? By the way, I love this, that God is painting himself as being really excited when animals give birth. Isn't that cool? I love that. Do you watch till when the doe bears are fawn? Do you count the months till they bear? Do you know the time they give birth? We're going to stop there because the next one is actually a different thing. Debating, and I don't debate. He was debating. I was just smiling and talking back. The atheist was getting a little hot. And he was saying, if, you know, pregnancy, for example, is an obvious, not designed. It's an obvious conglomeration of errors and such. And I'm going, walk me through that one. And they said, well, if it was designed, it wouldn't be so painful and difficult and dangerous. You'd just be able to get the baby out. And I'm saying, like how? And he literally said, like a zipper or an opening of some sort. And I went, all right. And he said, there's no other reason for it to go the other way. And I said, beg to differ. I said, when a woman first gets pregnant, and I only know this from reports. It's been years since I've been a woman. So I'm limited in my bathroom selection at Target. When a woman gets pregnant, you know, the glowing, the happy, and all the other, and she'll even go out and buy the maternity clothes when she still looks like a, you know, pencil. And then eventually, if it gets bigger and bigger, and she is, men could not do pregnancy, yeah, because we would forget. And we would enjoy it for an hour, and then we're done. But, you know, women, you know, they go through this long process, and then there's a chemical that is dumped into their system about 2 weeks before the baby is born. And it's got a very long name. Let's just call it the get the baby out of here system, chemical, right? And that's all of a sudden it goes for, hey, I'm pregnant, to get out. So the baby then comes out. It's a horrible thing. I know people say, oh, birth is a beautiful. No, it isn't. My daughter was born in Scotland, and we Scottish nurses, we call them sisters, and they're not Catholic, that's just what we call them. And they'd come up, and they said, oh, Patrick, you got to be in here. It's the most beautiful thing in the world. They're liars. They were screaming and sweating and cursing, and Cammie was doing some of that too. But we eventually, then they hand you this little wrinkled purple thing, and they say, oh, it looks like you. And you're going, I'm looking. Where do you blow it up? It's not entirely inflated. Anyway, Mama takes care of that baby. She wraps that baby up. She pays attention to that baby. Dads, not so much. Why? We're not invested. We'll be throwing the baby up in the air, and the wife will yell, ceiling fan, you know, and we're all. My wife and I had a real argument about, and you would appreciate this, because this to me was an economic argument. She came in, she goes, have you changed the diaper? And I'm going, you know, the nappy. And I went, no. And she said, well, why? It needs change. I go, no. The box says 3 to 5 pounds. That woman doesn't care what she spends. So at least I didn't say when she... my first thought was, she said, did you change the baby? I'm thinking, where's the receipt? But I didn't. Mamas, think about how invested mamas are to it. Mamas ensure the future of the population because they're invested. It's hard to get one of these. It's hard to raise them to maturity. They're invested. You think of Bill Cosby, he did his routine about his dad, talking about how moms love us, but dads, they love us, but they could make another one. And they kind of enjoyed it last time, if they remember. So they don't, it's not the same. That's why Mother's Day is such a big deal, Father's Day is not so much. That's why if there's a last biscuit on the table and it's Mama's, she'll say, oh, I'm not hungry. Dad'll go, cool. We're different. Birth matters. But how do you kind of get pregnant and kind of a womb and kind of a cervix and kind of a... Do you see what I mean? You have to have this developed. You have to have this skillfully made. You can't get partway there. The next bit is even more. They crouch down, give forth their young, their labor pains are ended. Their young thrive and grow strong in the wilds. They leave and do not return. That's speaking about instinct. Human beings do not have instinct. I know that's a bit controversial, but as far as we can tell, they don't. You know, when you're first born, there's this little bit of that reflex. You know, if you do this with a child, they'll do that. Then that goes away. I've got 3 grandsons, age 7, 4, and 46 weeks. And they have 0 instincts. they'll see a big chasm somewhere and go, I think I can jump it. I'm going, I don't think so. They'll see a flamethrower on television and say, I want that for Christmas. I'm going, I do too, but I'm not allowed, and neither of you. It's completely unacceptable. Instinct, think about this. We have birds that are born without mom and dad in an incubator, released to the wild, and they know what to eat, and they can fly across the world back to where the other birds go. Now, how did you kind of get that? How'd you develop that? You didn't fly all the way to Brazil. You flew to the Caribbean Sea and died. Well, then you don't have babies to get the rest of the way. It has to be a complete discrete unit. Do you understand what I mean by that? It has to be all a piece or it's nothing. It's rather like this. I often think of this as I'm flying. A Boeing 747 is made out of 2.5 million non-flying parts. None of them fly. You have to have them all. Now, back in the early days of aviation, planes were on an angle. Did you know that? The wheels up front were high and the wheel in the back, the tail wheel was low because you needed that. The propellers didn't get you that much oomph. And there was no division between you and the pilots. And the pilots would sometimes play a little trick on the passengers by picking up stray bolts and washers, putting them in a little bag, and setting them between them. And when you took off, the bag would tip. And they'd go back down, you know. And the pilots thought that was a hoot, you know. I've been on planes before where things went wrong. Nothing tragic. I don't have a really good story like that. You know, we struck a polar bear. You know, I don't have anything like this. But and they'll say, that bet went wrong. We got to turn around and go back. And I'm thinking, well, just don't use that bet. No, they need all the bets. So do you. Jan, how you doing? I'm doing fantastic. Heart's not working, but other than that, all the other organ systems top notch. That's not good. Instinct is even more. It is a brain wiring that has absolutely no explanation evolutionary wise. It had to have been designed in because it can't work part way. It has to be complete. We can go further here, and we will. God gets very sarcastic in verses 9 and forward. Will the wild ox, by the way, that's probably an auroch, which is an extinct form of like a Cape buffalo, a water buffalo, consent to serve you? And they were known for being pretty nasty. Big old longhorns and very nasty. Will it stay by your manger at night? Can you hold it to the furrow with the harness? Will it till the valleys behind you? Will you rely on it for its great strength? Will you leave your heavy work to it? And the whole point there is, if you cannot control an auroch or a wild ox, don't assume you're the wisest being in the universe. And don't go up against God. But then, one of my favorites. The wings of the ostrich flap joyfully. Well, let's just stop for a minute, shall we? Why? I mean, ostriches don't fly. People say, I've talked to atheists who have said, well, see, an ostrich is something which is either becoming a bird or is becoming not a bird. It's in between because it has a lot of bird-like qualities, including wings, but can't fly. And I've said, well, you're making a lot of assumptions here. One, the biggest, is that you are assuming that birds have to fly. Penguins don't fly. There are a lot of birds that don't fly. They fly in the water, they do, but not in the air. And ostriches fly in a different way. They have wings for three main reasons, by the way. One, when a predator comes near, they stick their head down. They do not bury their head. That's a myth. They stick their head down and fluff up their feathers, fluff up their rump. And the reason is predators tend to have horrible vision. A lion really can't see you unless you're moving. Rhino, even worse. Rhinos charge like crazy, but they can't see what they're running at. That's why I like them. I really do. It's just kind of like, I don't care what it is, we're going for it. You know, it's the opposite of a church. Church can have all the resources in the world and go, I'm kind of scared. I don't think we ought to do that. Maybe somebody will criticize us. A rhino is, just goes right through. I'm going to hit something. they fluff up and they look like a bush. Works. There's a couple other reasons. It's hot out there in the savannah. If you've ever been to Africa, you know that. You don't go skiing, although you can in a couple places, believe it or not. They put their wings out and they vibrate them in a certain pattern that moves air around and cools their body temperature. They do one more thing too. They're pretty fast at running and they can corner like crazy because they use their wings like the wing of an F1 car to turn, or an aileron of a plane. They will dip that thing and just to swing so the predator runs past them. I think they're doing pretty well with their wings. And God would say there's another reason. They like flapping them. And I like that about God. He gave them something just to flap. Because they like it. Why not? Now, God made otters. You got to like God. Otters, some of my favorite creatures. You know, lay around on the water and eat off their belly. I mean, come on. Only things ever made me wish there was reincarnation. Love to be an otter. My wife says, well, you kind of lay around and eat off. But there's more. Though they cannot compare with the wings and the feathers of the stork. She lays, by the way, the she lays, we're still, there's an argument over whether that refers to the ostrich or the stork. So hang on with me. She lays her eggs on the ground and lets them warm in the sand. That's both of them. Unmindful that a foot may crush them, that some wild animal may trample them. That's true. She treats her young harshly as if they were not hers. That's more the ostrich. She cares not that her labor was in vain. And a big old egg, and it's just kind of like, I don't care. For God did not endow her with wisdom or give her a share of good sense, yet when she spreads her feathers to run, she laughs at horse and rider. Do you know we still don't know how birds fly? Work with me here for a minute. I know you've seen the slow motion, and they'll say, look at the... Yes, but we don't know how they keep doing it. Do you know that there are birds that can fly for years without touching down? They eat, they sleep, they don't need to stop. We don't have that. I was flying back from Scotland one time, and the pilot came on and said, we're in a landing pattern now. We're about to land in Montreal, Canada. And I'm going, I'm not going to Montreal. And I was thinking, well, I'm supposed to be going to Cincinnati. What's going on here? And he came back on. He said, we've been facing a headwind. We're running low on fuel. I'm going, land. I'm excited now. Bienvenue à Montreal. Hello, Pierre. You know, I was very happy about this at that stage. We landed. The French people surrendered. It was good. We took their petrol and went to Cincinnati. The point being, a bird doesn't have to do that. You don't see birds going, eh. You don't see it. When we try to make machines that flap like birds, they come apart. We can't make one that holds together. I've had people say, but you, and by the way, I used to fly a plane. We had a 1947 air coupe, little two-passenger, 67 horsepower, no radio in it, because if you're going to die, who do you want to talk to? You know, you don't really need an air, you know. It had dents in the back from where birds ran into it. You know, they thought we were going faster. But we love that we think, and people draw this aileron, and they'll say, now what, air goes over and it creates a vacuum and it lifts it. That's all true. That is all true. But planes can also fly upside down. And everybody gets real quiet. Bumblebees can't fly. They can't. Physics is certain. The wing to weight ratio is all wrong. But those stupid bumblebees don't realize it. So they fly. Our science hasn't caught up with God's development. But there are more about birds. I used to rescue birds. When we were in Detroit, we rescued parrots for 8 years. Long story, I could tell you many parrot stories, and we loved them very dearly. Parrots are intelligent. They live a long time. When somebody takes them in and doesn't care for them, they can go nuts. Or if somebody takes them in and then they die, because a parrot can live 40 and 60 years, some of them, then we got to find them another home. That sort of thing. We rescued parrots. We took care of them. Loved them. Loved birds. Never took care of a raptor. Not interested. Yeah. But let's talk about raptors. Raptor. A hawk is flying along. He's going to talk about them in a bit. hawk's flying along, good old, let's say 1,400 feet, and a mouse is running across the desert floor. He can see it. How did he develop the eyesight? Oh, but we're not done. We're not done. When he flies and sees it, he immediately starts doing trigonometry and calculus. And he can figure speed, interception, and all of the math in his head. I can't. He can. I've been known to set my glass down and miss the table. Here he goes. And then he comes. And as he gets right over top, and he's coming fast. As he comes right on top, he throws his wings out and cups them and takes so many G's. A G is a gravitational unit. Takes so many G's, holds, stalls, grabs the mouse, and then more G's, pushes down without touching the ground, and takes off. That's amazing on many points. The math, the sight, all of that other. None of this can evolve by stages. Because if you're kind of catching a mouse, you're dead. Right? All those Disney shows where the lion's chasing the little deer. You know, now the deer gets away. Yay! And they do the little music. I'm always going, well, the lion's now going to die. What about the little lions? You know, when I was a boy, they didn't let me watch a lot of TV. Couldn't watch a lot of Disney because that was only on in America. And it was on Sunday night. And Christians couldn't watch. That was before God made DVRs. But anyway, there's another amazing thing because raptors' bones are different than other birds. You see, birds' bones are hollow. Even the feathers, the little ferrules, those are hollow. They dissolve into dust. If you have parrots in your house, you know this. You're always cleaning white dust off of stuff. What is that? Old feathers? It is breaking away. They're hollow. Not to be too indelicate, but a parrot has to poop about every 20 to 25 minutes. All birds do. The reason is they have to be light. Can't store that stuff up. Constipated bird's a dead bird. They're going to get caught. Also, birds don't show signs of illness. They look healthy, 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 die. The reason is you show signs of illness, that's weakness, you're going to be attacked. And so, how do they develop all of this? But they're all hollow bones, except for raptors. Raptors have arches and struts in their bones. If they didn't, when he came down and threw his wings out to do that straw, you'd hear snap, 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 and you'd have a boneless chicken laying there with a little mouse laughing, kicking sand in its face. How'd you develop that? Everything eats. Everything eats. What did it eat? How did it survive until what it ate evolved to? We have a match. There aren't a lot of omnivores on this planet. We're omnivores. We can eat anything. How did this thing eat? What did it eat? What is the balance that is in all of this? You can see, I hope, that this is, you can use this. By the way, I don't know anything about horses, but God likes horses because in verses 19 through 24, he uses verbs and imagery about horses that he doesn't use about any other animal. So if you like horses, you're on God's side here. You know, in Scotland, we have both ends of the horse thing. We have the Shetland horses. They're not ponies. People call them ponies. They're real horses that are about that tall. And Clydesdales. And we lived right down the street from where they were raising Clydesdales. And very gentle things. You know, little Shetland ponies come up and bite you. And I'm going, dude, you're tiny. You know, anyway, it's kind of like a macaw. Have you ever seen macaws? The big macaws? They think they're tiny. We're trying to get one, and it's trying to hide by putting its head in my pocket. And I'm going, you're only hiding 5% of yourself, bird. You're embarrassing all of us. Did you get a little love bird? It'll walk over and bite the German Shepherd. It stomps when it walks. There's a tiny little... And I'm going, dude. God has a great sense of humor. I mean, he had stuff left over, made a platypus. You got to love that. Going back to Leviticus now. More science stuff. And... chapter 17, there's no eating of blood. Now, you might be going, well, good. You'd be surprised how many societies in the world eat blood. Blood sausage, blood pudding. And also, if you're a Maasai warrior, you actually will nick the cow that you're taking care of and drink some of the blood. God said, don't do that. Well, blood carries diseases, but it also, he says, life is in the blood. Don't bleed things. If you had realized that, you wouldn't have killed your first president for getting a cold. He got a cold. So everybody goes, well, it's probably too much blood. So he bled him. That's why barber poles are red and white. Barbers bled people. They did. And every time you start getting your complexion back, they're going, oh, he's topping up. Bleed him again. You know, every time he's going, I'm feeling pretty good. No, you're looking too rosy. Something's wrong. We didn't realize that blood circulated for a very long time and that blood was important. God did. He said, don't eat the blood. By the way, not eating blood prevents you from getting a lot of diseases, blood-borne diseases. Although most blood that's in food has been cooked and is probably safe, we're also finding something else. And I kind of hesitate to say it because we're not sure the whys yet. Societies that eat blood tend to be more warlike and difficult, more murderous and alike than those that don't. We don't know the connection. It could be because they're eating blood, or it could be there's something in the blood. So again, God said, don't do it. Chapter 18 of Leviticus was the first time you were told you weren't allowed to marry your sister. Now, atheists think they gotcha. They'll say, now Cain ran away, but later on has a descendant of Cain. Where did he get his wife? Okay. First of all, there's every possibility, don't want to upset anybody here, but every possibility that chapter 1 and 2 of Genesis are poetic. But let's say they're not. Let's say they're not. The Bible says Adam and Eve had many children. So where did Cain get his wife? One of the girls followed him. That was normal. People go, oh, no. When God made Adam and Eve, they were perfect. Absolutely. Physically, mentally, sexually, perfect genetically. Right? It takes a long time for the genetic junk to show up. All of us here have a lot of genetic errors in us. The reason? You make copies of copies of copies of copies of copies of copies. Errors enter the equation. It wasn't until Leviticus 18 that God said, we're going to have to limit who can marry who in your society. And the rules for here are the same rules that most societies still use today. Did you have to do a blood test when you were... Do they still have to do that in Tennessee? Do you know? Most states don't. I remember I'd come across, was going to marry my wife, and of course she's from Colorado. They said, well, you have to go get a license. So I went in. They said, have you had your blood test? And I was thinking, I hadn't even studied. What? What's a blood test for? Well, the blood test was to make sure that you didn't have an R factor, a rhesus factor that was different than the other and cause issues. In Britain, even to this day, putting an announcement in that so-and-so is going to marry so-and-so, which is not done as much anymore, but even that announcement, it's not called a wedding announcement. It's called the banns, B-A-N-S. Because originally that was all done so that people could look at that and go, no, they can't marry that person because somebody already have another family or because you're related in a certain way. The community had to agree that these two did not violate Leviticus 18. We understand that genetically now. When you create thoroughbreds, you create weak creatures. You know that, right? For example, a Labrador, prone to Alzheimer's, early aging, and hip dysplasia. Collies, prone to eye disease, prone to issues in the front and with the heart, front joints and with the heart. Why? They're too purebred. We're supposed to be mixed. Get out of that wee family. Some of you, here's a bit of an aside, I work with Alzheimer's all the time. I don't work with the patients. What I do is work with the research, and then I teach the medical people that. That's what I did 2 weeks ago. when I was here. Remember, I had to head to Columbus the next day. A lot of folk have been told that that you have to get rid of aluminum, which we pronounce aluminium because we speak English. But aluminum, because it, you know, there's an aluminum connection. No, that all started because a guy made some errors studying the Chamorros Indians of Guam. And one of the problems with the Chamorros Indians is they spring from a very tight family tree. Four women are at the root of all of them. And they intermarry only with each other. That causes mental issues. They also like to eat the cycad plant seed, and that causes dementia. It wasn't aluminum. Sorry if you've been quitting using antiperspirant and throwing away all your pots. It didn't help you. And thank God it's not aluminum, because aluminum is the fourth most common element in the universe. So if you got rid of all your Tums and your antiperspirants and all your pots and pans and your ladder and all the other, you would get rid of about 0.004% of the aluminum in your system. Probably not worth it. Just go ahead and have a good aluminum sandwich and enjoy. Think about what we would have avoided as a world had we followed the laws of Leviticus when it came to the law of Jubilee. Debts canceled. Everything goes back to its original owner. No wars because the borders are reinforced. And on and on and on. We don't do that. What if we had a welfare system like they had? They didn't pay you every week or every month. They gave you a 2-year lump sum. And that was it for the 2 years. Now, why? Because if you get that much money, you can buy a garden. You can start a business. You can establish something and not have to get the handout 2 years from now. We just give you enough to keep you poor. And no more. On and on and on. There's wisdom, not just science wisdom, but sociology wisdom in here. I do have a few more minutes, do I know?
Sure.
Do we go to like 6:45? Is that
okay?
Is that normal?
Sure. That'll work.
I don't want to hold you late now. Come on, tell me true. Because you guys, okay? Because you guys don't ring a bell. I was at a church the other day where they rang one, then they rang another, then they rang a third, and that's kind of like instrumental music. And I'm okay with it, but I was going to tell a few. In Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, there is a, and by the way, if you're making notes, Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 3, it's also given there. But Genesis 2, 1 and 2. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. All is done. This is known as the law of constancy, the first law of thermodynamics. Matter or energy cannot be created or destroyed. We know this. If you didn't know that before, I'm not guessing. We cannot create, nothing can create or destroy matter. It rearranges the matter. And the same with energy. You see a black hole and it's sucking everything in and such. Look up the seahorse or the... No, look up the Horsehead Nebula. Oh, one of the most beautiful things in the universe. It's a massive star factory creating billions of stars. It is just amazing. Is it making them out of nothing? No, it's making them out of stuff that's been here since day one. The Bible talks about the fact that you cannot bring in any more matter or energy in Genesis chapter 2. And in Hebrews 4:3 backs it up. The law of constancy. By the way, we discovered the law of thermodynamics in 1841. The book of Genesis, probably 1000 BC-ish in there. By the way, until the mid-1800s, the prevailing theory was that creation was continuing. And that's called spontaneous generation. Today, all scientists believe that neither matter nor energy can be created or destroyed. The universe is functioning with what it had at the very beginning. Even the Big Bang guys will say everything was settled within the first 1 trillionth second of creation. Oh, well, Moses knew it. Or we could go more. We'll go to, since I said Hebrews, Hebrews chapter 1. This is everywhere, by the way. It's in Isaiah 51:6. It's in Psalm 102. But we're going to go to Hebrews chapter 1 to look at it. If you know science, you find science in strange places. Chapter 1, verses 10 and 11. He also says, "In the beginning, Lord, you laid the foundations of the earth, and the heavens are the works of your hands. They will perish, but you remain. They will all wear out like a garment." And again, Psalm 102, verse 26. Isaiah 51, verse 6. You can keep going. 9 years after the first law of thermodynamics was found, the second law of thermodynamics was found. And that is the law of entropy. It says everything is wearing out. Now, you and I know that. We have mirrors. Right? We look in the mirror and go, oh, look at that. Remember the first time I looked in the mirror and saw my dad looking out? Oh, that was a bad day. I saw a picture taken of me and my wife, and I'm going, who's that old geezer you're with? You know, she's going, well, that would be you. In any energy transfer, there is a degradation of energy and matter. It is not lost to the universe, but it is lost to the equation. That's why you will not have an air conditioning unit, for example, that's 100% efficient. Not going to happen. You're not going to have a petrol engine that is so efficient, it adds petrol, gasoline, to your tank. No. And it burns it. Things go from organized to disorganized. Take a look at your lawn. If you don't mow it for a while, what happens to it? If you don't take care of your house, if you don't take care of your car, things go from organized to disorganized. What does the standard Darwinian concept of evolution require? That it go from disorganized to organized. Whereas everything we know about science says that can't happen. Take the cell phone that you've got apart, yours, not mine. Put it into a box and shake it. How many billions of years will you have to shake it for it to come together and be a fully functioning phone? Well, it's not going to happen. Exactly. Entropy. Things don't organize. By the way, I've had people try this, and they'll say, but kids are getting taller, so you know they're getting better. That's not entropy. And sports records are falling. We are not getting more information. What we're doing is we are better at hygiene and nutrition and training. But we are also expending a great cost. Little Tara Lipinski won a gold medal, but at the age of 20 had a hip replacement. These little gymnasts that do the Olympics are already wrapped up and iced and coming apart. Yeah, they do stuff nobody else has ever done before, but the cost is terrible. Entropy. It's just a fact. I have friends who run. There's no need to run. You're in America. You've got guns. You have guns and cars. Why are you running? Walk. By the way, it's a fact. Run a mile, walk a mile, you expend exactly the same amount of calories. You're just doing it slower when you walk. But you're also not stressing your body. So, I've had people say, well, I ride a bike for a long time. I'm not wearing those pants. Neighbors made a petition. All right, one more. Genesis 3:15. He shall bruise your head and all that. And talked about the seed of the woman. This may be new to some of you. I just love this one. Until 1000 AD, 2000 years after this is written, it was commonly understood that only the male had seed. Women did not. She was an incubator. That's why it was never the children of Sarah. It was always the children of Abraham. Because she's just the incubator for the seed of the man, his descendants. The first one to say that females contribute somehow was Michael Salos of Constantinople in 1000 AD. But it was Leonardo da Vinci, remember I brought him up a while ago, in 1500 AD, who figured out, well, she has to contribute somehow because the children are a mix of the traits. Why did it take so long for somebody to notice this? I don't know. The male sperm was not seen until 1677. It was thought that the woman was the fertilizer of the sperm, and that was it. And that was not disproven until 1880 at a big scientific conference that turned into a fight. And scientists don't know how to fight. It's just kind of like... But it was a big fight between, and I'm not making these terms up, the spermatist and the ovist. The scientists who believed it was all sperm and those who believed that women had an ovum, an egg. And it was 1880. How did the first prophecy in the Bible mention the seed of woman when we didn't get it for 2,800 years? There's so much more. 1 Corinthians 15:39 talk about the different kinds, four kinds of flesh, and names them. Man, beast, fish, and fowl. Well, two scientists named Schleiden and Schwann wrote a book proving the Bible wrong because under a microscope, all of the flesh is the same. Until 1930, when the electron microscope showed that flesh differs and can be placed in four types. Man, beast, fish, and fowl. 1 Corinthians 15:39. There's so much more, but I have one more time to come. And we'll talk more about that and more about the arguments of atheists and all that sort of thing. But I hope that you've enjoyed this. And we'll do it again next time. Okay? All right. Cheerio. Flee.